Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, what are the challenges faced by British Muslim youth?
Islamophobia, misrepresentation in the media, the difficulties of integration, external influences, and keeping up with cultural values are just a few of the challenges that are faced by Muslim youth in modern Western society. In this episode, Islam and Life will investigate the particular challenges that young Muslims face in modern British society. But first, let's take a look at what young Muslims have to say on this topic.
You have a separate issue, which is that Muslim youth, of course, are in a minority in this country, in a country where Islam is constantly in the spotlight, often for all the wrong reasons. There's all sorts of Islamophobia going on at a local level, in schools, in the form of bullying. There's a real challenge for Muslim youth to resolve the identity crisis that a lot of them suffer from, which is, am I British? Am I Muslim? Can I be a British person and a Muslim person? Can I keep my faith in my identity and also be part of a secular liberal society? There's a whole host of challenges that they have to try and resolve.
Islamophobia is right at the top. In terms of integration, I think it's important to define what you mean by integration. I think myself, I was born in this country. I see myself as a British citizen, a British Muslim. I'm British. I'm also Muslim. There's no contradiction with that. I'm very happy to be Muslim. I'm very happy to be British. So I don't see an integration issue.
I think Islamophobia is a problem, and it is something that the Muslim youth experience. I think it's something that the Muslim community as a whole experience as well.
Whenever there's a terrorist attack somewhere in the world, you know, whether you're at school or whether you're in the workplace, it almost feels as if people are coming to you for an explanation as to what is happening or why that is happening. And that's, you know, me talking from personal experience. It's always, you know, from the political side, you know, it's always a difficulty that, you know, that one has to face, almost like bearing the weight of the Islamic world on your shoulder.
I believe that Islamophobia is a very, very important issue that needs to be addressed, because many Muslims on the press get a bad impression of young Muslims. So I believe that there is still Islamophobia out there.
I think for Muslim youth, it's about finding the balance in British society between staying true to their culture and preserving their faith while still integrating with British society. That balance is obviously something that Muslims find difficult at times, because there can be conflicts. There can also be parallels, but there can be conflicts.
You see increasingly, you know, Muslims in professional careers, going out and about in their daily lives. And I think largely those Muslims that are integrating well are not so visible because they're integrated, and so they don't stand out as the troublemakers might stand out. But actually, if you look around, I think, you know, there are largely integration is happening, but it's silent.
So as we can see, the majority of the young Muslims are talking about Islamophobia, fear of Islam, bad perceptions, and the people rejecting the Muslim presence or not understanding it or not understanding Islam. At the same time, some are talking about, you know, identity crisis. Am I a British? Am I a Muslim? Who am I first? And in which we have to connect culture and religion. These are problems. And then there are also problems when it comes to the non-Muslim majority countries, when it comes to discrimination, when it comes to the way they have to deal with not only the perceptions, but the way the law and legislations are enforced in the European countries or in Britain, for example. So there are many challenges around, and something which is the way the Muslims and the young Muslims have to deal with this, and in which way they can have a vision for the future, a positive one, where the great majority of their fellow citizens have a bad perception of Islam. So, well, to answer all these questions and try to get a better understanding of the challenges, I'm joined by Ahmed Udin, a spokesman for Muslim Youth Helpline and coordinator for Islamic Human Rights Commission. So, thank you so much for being with us today. As you have watched the clip right now, and the great majority of the young Muslims and the young British Muslims are talking about Islamophobia as the main challenge. What is the state of affairs when you have to deal with, for example, the British society when it comes to talk about the situation of the young British Muslims now? What kind of challenges are they facing?
The challenges the Muslim youth are facing in the UK are manifold. It starts from the family, because there's the generational gap between their parents and themselves who've been brought up in the UK. And then it goes into the wider society, where Islam's always in the spotlight. Islam's always seen as a negative light. So there is this identity conflict where people are trying to see, where do I fit in this whole wider picture of thing? So are we Muslim? Are we not? Are we British first? Are we not? And then in the family, you've got the parents saying that you're Bangladeshi or Pakistani, whatever it may be. So they're ripped apart from all over the place. And the issues are, I mean, the family issues are as any issues that any family would have in this country. Hmm. But the problem is that people of background that come from Muslim background do not want to discuss issues openly.
But this is still the case, because the problem is, you know, we have been talking about the second generation, and the second generation gap with the first generation, the primal migrants, for example, the people who came first and then they got children here. But now we are reaching the third and the fourth generation. Mm-hmm. So now, very often the parents are born and they were raised in the UK, and we still talk about this kind of gap between the parents and the kids. Is this because of Islam, or what is the problem? Why are we still talking about this? It's even, you know, the problem is that we are talking to non-Muslims and you know, people of, you know, our fellow citizens by saying, look, it's over now, we are integrated, and we heard someone in the clip saying, I am happy to be British, I'm happy to be a Muslim, so I don't have this problem. But still we keep on repeating this kind of problem. It's as if to raise a Muslim family in Britain is a problem per se. What is the problem?
Well, once someone made a comment to me that the people who have come from Bangladesh, Pakistan or India, wherever it may be, the first generation are holding on to the culture more so. They feel as if this is their pride. They have to hold on to it. So when I go back to Bangladesh every now and again, I see that they have really moved on. But people over here have really held on to the culture that was, you know,
In a very protective way.
So what they've done, they've enforced that culture onto the second generation. And the second generation, with all their problems and whatnot, trying to adjust this society, are bombarded with culture, religion and society, trying to adjust to society. And then you come the third generation, and they're confused, because they get mixed signals from everywhere. They might get one signal, but their next door neighbor might get a different signal. And, you know, in wider society, when they kind of interact with each other, they get confused. I'm third generation. My parents were born here. But my mother...
So you are a good example of what I was trying to say. So what could be the problem here between the second and the third generation?
The things that my mother, my grandfather thought that this society was too westernized, or it comes into conflict with Islam too much. So he decided to pack his bags and take my mother back home. Okay. So she spent most of her childhood going on to adulthood in Bangladesh. So when she came back, she was a product of Bangladesh.
Oh, okay, so it's still in between. So it's still,
and they did the same to me. I spent a few years in Bangladesh.
Oh, you went back there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and this is a very, very common experience. And for those who did not go back home, did not pick up the culture from back home, they're exposed to all these different ideas, and they're really confused.
So there is a great deal of confusion.
Yes.
What is, in fact, the what we call a crisis between being a Muslim and being a British, and to try to marry these two dimensions and say, okay, it's the balance approach. Is this still something that you can see within the community? And would you say that the Muslims are not doing enough, or the young Muslims don't get enough from the older generations in this specific field and specific issue?
Well, I mean, whether young Muslims are doing enough or not, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that a lot of these individuals live in areas where
it's socially deprived of many, in many ways. So there's high unemployment, there's
social problems, socioeconomic problems,
drug dealing, there's prostitution, there's, and these have an impact on the third generation. So they're trying to marry all the different kind of aspects of life, but they're finding it very difficult. So even if an individual who has gone through the system and managed to educate themselves, gone to university, got a decent job, but they can't divorce their social background, the past, it's still married to them. So, you know, I might have a good job and whatnot, but I still have the baggage of my culture.
Yes, I think that there are two things in what you are saying, mm-hmm. which are very important. We really need to look at the cultural problems and the tensions on the identity dimension as what they are per se, but we should not mix this with socioeconomic problems as if they were religious problems. They're not religious problems. No, they are socioeconomic problems, and we have to deal with that. Mm-hmm. And very often in the Islamic rhetoric, we blame, you know, the poor or the needy people not to be Muslims mm-hmm. Enough or not to understand Islam enough, while the problem is mainly their social status, where they are coming from, yes. because they have no education. So this is something which is important. There is another problem that I want you to address as someone who is also working with the Muslim youth helpline, and they were, you know, have been working with them, and what I got from them is really we have lots of problems as young Muslims, you know, when it comes to our principles, our practices, what is happening, drugs and violence, domestic violence, and the Muslims are not talking about our problems. It's as if there is a silent reality here that we don't want to talk about, and it's not helping the young Muslims and the young British Muslims. Are you facing this, and what is the state of affairs in that field? Mm-hmm. Are we addressing the youth problems the right way?
We're definitely not. We definitely are not, because the infrastructure provided by the government is inadequate. Whether they wish to deal with it or not, that's a separate question. The parents are sometimes not qualified to address it. The masjids are not dealing with it. The masjids would kind of give you, if you went to the masjid when I was growing up, you'd just go there to learn how to read the Quran, pray, and that's about it. Nothing more beyond that. The mosques won't be dealing with issues, you know, the Muslims will be facing. They got nowhere to go. So when we get calls at the Muslim Youth Helpline, there are issues that where it would be so easily solved if it was, you know, spoken about in the family, but they wish to kind of put a lid on it. Hmm. So if, for example, incest were taking place, and
is happening in Muslim families,
in Muslim households, yes, it's happening. Yeah. Hmm. Now the mother or the father might be even aware that it's happening,
yes. Hmm.
And they will kind of put a blind eye to it.
Hmm.
And because it'll bring shame to the family, what would happen to this daughter of mine? She won't be able to get married in the future. Mm. People would never communicate with me. People would dissociate from me. Or if it's my brother who's raping my daughter, then, you know, I don't want shame to come upon him. So.
These are things that we have to deal with. We have to address these dimensions, and this is something which is once again. Because of what you are saying, culturally speaking, we are not used to speak about this, that it's shame on us if it's known. So this is something that we have to break within the community and as Muslim from within. So this is a set of challenges coming from within the community, and we have to address them. Now, when it comes to what we heard coming from the young Muslims there, they were saying, okay, in the society, and within the surrounding society, one of the main problems is Islamophobia. So people rejecting Islam, and then we feel discriminated. What is the problem, and in which way you think that the young Muslims should react to this atmosphere of a kind of racism against Muslims?
Well, the Muslim youth, when they come from a socially deprived area, when everyone's telling them that you come from a society that it's full of failure, the only thing they can hold on to and have pride is Islam. And looking back at the glorious past, you know, they say we're Muslim, we're proud to be Muslim. The society is telling them that Islam is bad again and again and wherever they may go. And now, so what they've done is that Muslim youth are getting all sorts of books, reading up on it, and getting mixed signals or mixed messages with no kind of structured teaching. So they might pick up Sayyid Qutb's Milestone or Maulana Maududi's books. And
Without critique, they mean to contact the specific context of the 40s and the 70s,
and it's not put into
the
60s. Yeah. These books have been around for the last 40 years.
Yeah.
But why is it causing a problem now? Mm. It's because the institutions aren't dealing with it. Institutions aren't saying that, how do you address social ills? How do you address
what should be done by the youth and for the youth for example in the UK, when they are dealing with discrimination on the job market, discrimination in media, discrimination when we listen to the political voices in this country and throughout Europe. Now there is something which is really the populist parties are taking over almost everywhere, and what they are normalizing is what yesterday was said by far-right parties now is said by traditional mainstream parties. So what should be the involvement of the youth in this specific field, from the social discriminations, from the religious discriminations, the political marginalization?
I think what the youth need to do is that those who have managed to escape the system, those who have managed to become successful in whatever career they've chosen, they need to feed back to the community. Now, in the 60s and 70s, when the black community was having a really difficult time, when the students were underachieving, when the teachers saw them as underachievers, what the black community did was that they went around and formed supplementary schools, self-help schools, whether it's after school, whether it's on the weekends. And this is what brought them up. This is what is building up the community.
But we have supplementary schools.
We do.
A lot of supplementary schools within the Muslim community.
But the problem is they're still run by the second generation. And the second generation politics, culture, everything, it's got the baggage of it. It's the Muslim youth of today that need to kind of rise up.
What should be new in these schools? What would you expect?
They should be teaching and talking frankly about the issues that we are facing.
Yes. From within, first?
From within, very bluntly.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times is that the Muslim youth don't have a connection with the teachers.
Yeah.
And they need to have... That's why the Muslim youth that do go through the system need to connect with the youth again and tell them, look, you need to rise above this. This is the way forward. Like I said, when I went to Bangladesh, when I came back, all my friends from primary school, none of them had made it through. Some of them become drug dealers, some of them in prison, some of them have been killed. And I was very fortunate enough to have this luxury to go back home to pick up some of the, or stay away from the crimes that I might have been involved in.
You came back spiritually equipped to face all these social problems.
Yes.
Now, you are also working with the Human Rights Commissions, and what we are facing today is really discriminations. And it's the problem that I have, for example, when you speak about young Muslims, is very much, to be accepted by the country, you should show that you have a good behavior, solidarity, all that is fine. But we still have to struggle for rights and recognition and respect.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't see enough, young Muslims in that field, in the field of striving and struggling for rights and respect. What should be done in that field?
Well, we need to hold the government to account. The government isn't really doing enough. If in a socially deprived area, the government would fund career advisors. And the career advisors go into these areas and say, look, you're not going to make it through, you're not going to go to university, do an apprenticeship, do something like you're good with your hands, do something like carpentry and whatnot. So the government is kind of sending these advisors and not...
But who is going to change the government's policy?
We have to kind of get involved in policy making in every level.
How?
In every level. We have to get involved, and we have to, beyond the scope of our careers, we have to give back to the society. Now, some people make that as their career. Social work is their career. If you can't make that a career, fund such organizations and institutions and hold the government to account.
But I'm sorry, what I see is that many Muslims that are succeeding within the society, they are very, very often disconnected from the Muslim community. They just forget about them. So how do we reconnect them with the reality at the grassroots level?
Well, I mean, they forget because they've just come out of it, and they don't want to be associated with it. They want to stay away from the ills of society, but it still drags them down. Now, the government, it really needs to kind of get this act together. When government puts up money for the Muslim community, it comes in the form of prevention of violent extremism. how
that's
does
what
that,
it is. Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
How does that help the community? Now, most Muslim organizations are infested with this kind of pot of funding. Hmm. With the new government coming in power, they're putting the plug on the funding. Now, all these institutions and organizations that did support the Muslim community are going to be wrapping up.
Yes. Would you have a positive, just to end, because we are ending now the program, but just a good positive example that we might just think about and say, okay, this is the way forward?
Well, we've been slating the second generation, but I think they have set up some institutions. They have set up the masjids, the halal butchers, some supplementary schools and whatnot. It's the responsibility of the current generation to get their act together, support these institutions, grow them, you know, feed it with money, whether it's kind of voluntary work, and let it grow. And, you know, make a flourish and bring the youth into these organizations. It's
so institutionalizing the presence, because this is also what we are doing with the Muslim Youth Health Plan. It's just an institution run by the youth, but for the youth, and it's independent, and we need institutions. This is what you think this will be the future for the young Muslims?
I don't see any other way, because the government's not doing anything. The previous generations are not equipped to do so. The only people who are equipped to do so is the current generations who have been successful. And they need to kind of feedback into society.
Thank you so much. There are challenges, and we have been talking about internal challenges within the Muslim community when it comes to education, when it comes to understanding the reality of the society, the identity crisis, and to be able to get a better understanding of Islam, but also a better understanding of the societies, and also to be able to dare to speak about the problems when it comes to drugs and incest, for example, and domestic violence. There are problems the youth are facing, and they are unable to find a way to speak about them within the communities, and for example, some organizations are trying to be receptive and to listen to what the young Muslims have to say. At the same time, there are external challenges with the surrounding society. We spoke about Islamophobia, discriminations, being involved in politics, and something which is part of the process for the future is institutionalizing this presence with, you know, organizations and presence, and also to deal with the surrounding society when it comes to discriminations on the job market, bad perception within the media, and also to challenge the government's policy when these policies are only based on, you know, targeting violence and not talking about the reality of the great majority of the Muslims in this country as citizens. These are challenges, internal and external, and what you are saying is that the young Muslims should be involved in the process because they are the future. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen, and here is the way to contact us.
We'd like to hear your views on today's show, as well as ideas for future programs. You can do this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also join our Facebook page by searching Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can view past programs, keep up to date on future shows, leave comments, and meet other Islam and Life fans.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Ahmed Uddin. Thank you so much, because you are an example of this young generation being involved in the society, and I think that we have to listen to you, and I hope to see you next week, inshallah.